This is November 22nd, and the next meeting is December 20th, 1992, in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Good morning, Bartholomew.
Well, my friends, good morning.
Good morning.
I think we need to spend some time today getting into a state that I hope translates as excitement over the task that we have jointly decided to undertake. And the task, as you understand and remember clearly, is a state of full and complete enlightenment, or the total knowing of who you are as much as is possible within the body form. I think in order to get excitement about this particular search, there needs to be some ways of reminding you of why it's worth it. Because what I experience in many of you is you have times of absolute remembrance of to stay in the moment, to be conscious of awareness, to be awareness itself, and then something comes up and it takes it out of your awareness, out of your mind, out of your intention, and you find yourself spending often weeks and sometimes months embroiled in other subject matter, only to realize yet again that you had forgotten this and start to make your way back. I think one of the reasons for that is perhaps there hasn't been enough of a clear picture to you of what it is exactly that this state has to offer you. Because I don't think any of you would fight too much over such statements as it would be worthwhile for you to live in a world where you had absolutely everything you wanted. You would agree to that. If where everywhere you looked you saw nothing but love and beauty, you would agree to that. That everywhere, every step that you took, you were filled with peace and an exultation at being alive. You would all agree to that. So I would like to propose, first of all, that that is the basic motion, and the moving toward those goals is what we are trying to excite you about. Now, last time that we met, we talked about that level between your everyday mind and this deeper state, and we talked a great deal about the nature of that interim state, which is, in your words, fear. And we also stated that one needs to simply learn how to relax into the fear, allow the fear state to speak clearly to you, become very alive with it, and then you begin to move to the deeper state. Now, today I would just like to discuss one of the aspects of this deep source state of enlightenment, or God presence, or awareness, or however you'd like to talk about it. Because I think that whether you are conscious of this or not, there is a fear that rides in all of you that somehow you're going to get all the way through the fear, and then you're going to see this amazing sea of light and power and wonder called God, and then somehow you're not going to be able to access it. And you're not going to be accessible to it for various reasons, one of which you would say something like, well, I have read all of the great books, and they tell me that God can at some time decide to either embrace us or not, meaning the idea of heaven and hell. That when you die, you perhaps go to heaven, you perhaps go to hell, and then there's that middle state that one never quite knows, you know, what you do to qualify for that. And so maybe some of those things you qualified for hell, but you might get in purgatory. There's a lot of confusion about the state. And so when you begin to try to get excited about enlightenment, I think there accompanies that excitement a tremendous fear that you will somehow get to the line and be rejected, that you will somehow get within reach of it and it will elude you. And I realize that part of the reason for this is that the physical human models that you have used for all of these lifetimes have that as a basic component. In fact, it is almost like the human says, I don't want to know what I really want because I don't have a prayer of getting it. I would like to repeat that. I think that as one of the ongoing mantras that human awareness has in it is, I don't really want to know what I want Because the minute I know that I want it, I know I absolutely can't have it. I can't have the perfect this, I can't have that, I can't have this, I can't have that. Now, with all of this put together, what it does on the unconscious level is to bleed away the excitement and the desire. If you, for example, had as your goal a particular kind of a home that you wanted to live in, and you knew that you had to go through certain numbers of years of work in order to establish that as a reality, you would spend a lot of your time looking at books and floor plans and discussions and excitement building toward this one future goal. And it is a lot of that excitement and introspection about the delight of getting it that gets you to the end. But when we start talking about enlightenment, so little has been said that there aren't a lot of roads to travel. But the aspect that we want to talk about this time, and please realize there are various aspects, but the one I want to talk about this time is one that if we were to put it in words, we would say that when you begin, say it another way, you will know that you are beginning to approach the very vast sea of light and power awareness when you begin to get in touch with your true nature. And I want to qualify, one aspect of the true nature is you begin to be able to sense, without even knowing why, you be able to sense your innate goodness. This goodness does not have an opposite of badness. This goodness is not something that is good, bad, right, wrong. This is a sense of total, magnificent knowing that under all of that fear, there is this immensity that as you begin to move down into it and allow yourself to relax into it, remember, all you have to do is begin to relax. When you begin to relax in it, you begin to have strange thoughts coming up through your human mind, such thoughts as, you know, I'm not really so bad. You know, given all of the opportunities, I haven't done so badly. You know, there are parts of me that are magnificent. You know, my intention is never to harm. You understand? You begin to have trace patterns coming through your awareness. When you begin to have this, please know you're on your way. And you are always going to then begin to run right into the stone wall, which is someone outside, and then, of course, you inside, are going to find a way to make you believe that you are not that goodness. You are going to begin to create outside of yourself people saying things to you that begin to make you doubt your basic, true goodness. And as you begin to understand that that is part of the magnificent play of your own awareness coming back to have you test yourself yet again, then you begin to relax. In other words, the world begins to throw a picture at you to ask you to begin to really decide, do you want to feel your true goodness? That has nothing to do with what you have done or what you have not done. It has nothing to do with the right and wrong of life. It has to do with the integrity and the pulsating life force that is you. And as a result of this pulsating life force having taken form, out of that form and life force together, you have performed acts and deeds that you are not pleased with. And that is the fact. That does not in any way harm the essential goodness. The goodness remains. The acts come out of fear. The acts come out of illusion and confusion and self-doubt and the sense that is also a part of the human condition, which we have to talk about, and I know humans don't like it, but you are part of the animal kingdom. And there is a part of the animal sense of the life that has its own desires to protect, to keep one's boundaries, to define the territory, to defend what you have to the last. You are part of that kingdom, and I think it's very foolish and very entrapping for you to forget it. In fact, if I might say it, I think one of the greatest difficulties in getting to the spiritual light is you keep denying the fact that you are a basic human that has part of the animal kingdom as its wholeness. And if you keep forgetting this, if you keep trying to jump over the whole animalistic desire section of your life and somehow catapult yourself to full-blown awareness, you are going to keep stumbling against your face. You are going to continually begin to see yourself. Now, you know how this works. Let's just go through it. When you begin to feel the animal part of you, that instinctual part, that judgmental part, that protective part, that part that says, this is mine, and you know, you have to be first in line in the cafeteria because there might not be enough of whatever it is you want, and you have to be first in the line at the stoplight, you know, all of this, so whatever it might be. When you begin to be aware of the incredible animalistic protective dance that you go through all of the time, trying to keep your life force and your body in some kind of life and movement and feeding of it in a safe place to sleep and warmth and all of these things. You know, see, the things that you end up being protective about are the things that are essential to all human and animal well-being, which is you have to have something to eat, you have to have a warm place to sleep, and you have to have some sense of solidity in the world. Some sense of appropriateness right there in the moment, in the world. And so all of the competitive, appetitive nature comes in. And when you, everyone in this room, to the extent to which you can begin to see your own face that way and begin to laugh and become human around your own humanness, is the degree to which you are going to begin to find the light under it. If you continue to deny, then things continue to be confusing. Now, one of the main ways you deny is you do this, and you all, here we go again, is the act of projection. The act of projection. When you begin to sense your own appetitive nature, your own nature that wants to keep what you've got and wants to, do you understand? There's no one I hope would deny that you have this, I hope, anyway. And so when you begin to feel that in you, when you watch it rise and fall time after time, what you realize you have done in the past, and which is, this is what an adult seeker has to really see, is that the first thing that you've done many, many, many lifetimes ago is you have projected it out on others. And so you allow other people to carry these projected parts of your psyche that you haven't wanted to incorporate, because then you say things like them, you know, well, they're barbarians. You know, well, they're barbarians, and, you know, isn't this the way it is? They're the barbarians, and you're the whatever you are. All right, now, whatever the opposite of that might be. But when you begin to watch with good humor the constant strain of your own awareness as you go through the day, saying this and that inside your head about other people, and realizing that anything that has to do with any other human being is absolutely as relevant for you as it is for them. You share in the vast wholeness of being, partly of the human delight and partly of the magnificent divine delight, and it is the blending of those two together that is the essential rambunctious wonder of being a human being on this planet. It is not just being the animal in its way, because the animal has its own sense of things. An animal senses its natural state in a different way than a human does. And as the human is willing to see all of those parts of themselves and to claim them as their own possibility and their own potential, then you begin to laugh at the world outside of you, and you begin to laugh at all of those motions inside of you. You begin to become, and this is a very wonderful moment, you begin to relax into your humanness. Because again, I will tell you that for many of you who have been brought up to be very, very good boys and girls, and you know, a lot of you in this room were brought up to be very, very good boys and girls, it is that very straining to be good, to be perfect, to be right, to be honest at all times. Honest at all times. We've talked about this before, my friends. There's no honesty in the person that says, I am honest at all times. They aren't paying attention to what's really happening in their awareness. So when that you see, what I'm saying to you is, are you seeking to be good or are you seeking God? If you are seeking to be good, then you are going to have a very difficult time of it, because you are at the very basis of the cellular construct of your being, you are a spontaneous, rambunctious life force that follows the patterns of all of the surrounding life force, and sometimes it's defensive, and sometimes it's protective, and sometimes it's angry, and sometimes it's not, and you are all of it. And the wonderful rolling from one of those responses to the other, and at the same time allowing yourself to feel that you have this potential to act in this manner, the minute that you begin, a softening takes place, a magnificent softening, and you begin to join the human race. So many of you are trying to step above the human race. I have people come to me and they say that they want to see a time on this planet where there aren't any more humans. They want to see only enlightened ones walking around. And whatever happens at a future time, that is not what we're talking about now. What we're talking about now is the magnificent excitement of bringing the two seemingly dual natures into one magnificent rambunctious whole, and it begins and ends by honoring the parts of you that have to do with the human animal chain of consciousness, and with the delight of bringing this deeper, more magnificent, more formless part of consciousness moment by moment by moment into whatever it is. The minute you stop trying to be good and just relax into whatever you are, into really allowing yourself to see your life, yourself, your creation, your beingness, exactly as it is, to be able to realize that you are all of one human condition, and at the same time that you see that and feel that, there comes into, when you seek to be good, you begin to move into your goodness. Because being good and goodness are not the same thing at all. And I think many of you, my friends, have exchanged the words and have pursued the wrong, if I could say it, the wrong word. Because the word God does not have as its criteria the necessity to be good. In fact, one of the most exciting things about reading literature about people who have become enlightened is often they are not good at all. They have romped and stomped around their lives. They have done what they pleased. They have risked. They have made mistakes. They have killed. They have done all. I'm not suggesting you all got to do that. I'm just simply saying the idea that the only one who crashes into enlightenment is one who proceeds being better and better and better is not really a true statement. When you begin to even read the lives of the saints of all the great religions, almost always the one that gets enlightened is the one that the Mother Superior is screaming at and saying, "You're not doing it right. You're not doing it right." It is rarely the Mother Superior. It is rarely the Mother Superior. It is the one under her, the one that keeps coming in and saying, "But Mother, that's not loving. We have to do it this way. Follow the rules. Don't say anything. Go to your room. Do whatever." This is at all religions, not any particular one at all. It is the ones who are not following rules to be good. They are following their own magnificent intuition to God. And there is a difference. And there is a difference. And you begin to feel it in you when you begin to say, "I'm not good. And you know what? I'm not even sure I want to be." How many of you really want to be good by the definition of what this particular culture means is good? When you begin to define it, I think those of you that want to get up and leave, go by all means, go ahead. I know this is a periphery talk here, but truly, when you begin to define for yourself what a good person is, the definition of it is so constipating, I don't know why you would wish it. I am very frank. You go home for yourself, have a little fun, and go home this afternoon and write it down. And this is what, but you see this illusory idea that you really need to be good. And at the last, what do you really mean? And when you discover, which I pray you do, when you discover what you mean by being good, you are going to be liberated. You're going to be liberated from the idea in your mind that you are not already that. Because when you get excited by your definition of goodness, your own, that comes out of your being, out of your life experience, when you are in touch with that, you will start to cry for yourself, about yourself, embrace yourself, because you will know You are good. You will know it by your definition. And the world's definition can come and go, and you will get in touch with this intrinsic magnificence that is your own goodness. And you get it by stopping listening to other people's lists of what good is. Stopping ideas in the mind that come out not only of your own past, but the collective past. By the past which has decided that the road to goodness is through following rules and to never stepping out of those rules. And I will tell you yet again, the ones who crack through to enlightenment, almost without exception, have not followed the rules. That does not mean you go out breaking the rules. That means that you do not rely on another person's set of what goodness is for you. And when you understand, and I really ask you, this is, you're moving into the time for some of you that is very sacred. It isn't for all of you, so if it isn't, don't worry about it. But it's a good time. It's a good time to get very quiet within, because whenever the whole, you know, a lot of this planet is Christian-oriented, and especially in this part of the world. And so when you begin to use those deep times that are surrounding you, to use them for your own maximum deepening, you use then a natural force that's moving with tremendous power. And as all of the really faithful, the ones who are really filled with faith, in whatever way that translates for them, they move into deep deepenings as we move into the Christian Christ birth. And if you can use the power to go within, and I'm asking you between now and the next time we meet, if you could really give a lot of deep, deep thought to what is goodness for you, what will make you feel that you are a good being? What are those definitions? And when you start touching them, when you start hearing them in your mind coming out of your own being, you are standing now in your own light. You are aware of your own goal. You are now, if I could put it this way, in charge of your own path and are not waiting for others outside of yourself to constantly tell you that such and such is this and such is that. You begin to form what I call a core of integrity around the delight, please hear this, of the delight of being exactly who you are. And that's when you can turn around and with all deep gratitude, look at every single event you have ever done, no matter how you labeled it, and say, thank you. Anything that's happened to you, anything that you've done to other, it does. You begin to see the symphony of your life, the symphony of all of the magnificent, related, interrelated wonder of the fabric of your life as it has combined with the fabric of other lives, all weaving this magnificent sound of consciousness. And you begin to hear it and feel it inside of you. You sing with a different pitch. You aren't looking outside for the trickle of approval from some very frightened part of consciousness that says, you've got to do it right. You've got to do it my way. You've got to do it this way. You begin to be your own knower. You begin to sing with that knowing. And then when you have defined for yourself the integrity of your own goodness, then you will at all costs follow your own path. You will follow your path to goodness. Why? Because you know it to be yours. It isn't imposed on you. And some of the things that others say were good, you will look at and say, no, that's not for me. Excuse me. That has no meaning to me. This has all meaning. But it comes from the inside. Do you understand, my friends? It comes inside of you with a shout. And when you start on that kind of a path, enlightenment is truly not far away. But until you stop that seeking for a kind of a gossamer perfect self or person that then will be able, if they're in their perfection, to be taken into the perfection of God, you see, finally, you just simply relax and begin to appreciate with total gratitude every single event that has ever occurred to you in your life. Anything that you have done to other, no matter how heinous it may be in your mind, what others have done to you, no matter how heinous, you understand the magnificent explosion of the symphony of your life. And that song that comes out of you goes out into the createdness ahead of you. It becomes magnetic. It draws events to you to bring you closer and closer to the heart of God. It goes out strong out of the being of you and not from that small, frightened part of you. It shouts of your integrity, and it goes out and you begin to see and hear and move from your own integrity with that purpose coming out of you without idea of other. And it isn't that you don't worry about other. In fact, you begin to care so very much more about other because you are no longer trying to avoid other or to keep hold of other. You are now able to simply allow other, all things, life, money, people, the friendships, love affairs, parents, children, whatever, go their way, go their way. There's a letting go because you have come into contact with the magnificent rightness of your own song. And when you have heard your own song as right, no matter what way it was formed, you know in the next moment that no matter what your child might be doing, as strange and painful and difficult as it looks to you, such a way away from goodness, you know now because you have discovered your own song of goodness, you know that they are on their way to creating theirs. And then you begin to appreciate. And then you begin to let go. And then you just totally embrace everything in life as it comes, knowing that no matter what the veil looks like, no matter what the masks are, that there is a magnificent creation going on under all of this. And you begin to then appreciate and honor everyone else, no matter what their way is. You stop trying to assess the right and wrong of their journey. You begin to just remember your own magnificent creation and know that you did not do it with your conscious mind. The conscious mind is the last to know. The conscious mind is the last to know. Because the conscious mind is the part of you that is so caught up in other, in good, in right, in power. You see, power means right. No one ever says, I'm totally wrong, I'm totally empowered. Oh, I'm so wrong. I'm so full of power. So the whole idea that you have to be the best to have power. You have to have more of everything good, and less of everything bad. You see, as you begin to look at this, you begin to realize that the very ideas of what power is and how one gets it and what it says you have been following a road that has come to you from the outside towards you and not from the inside going out. If you are stuck on your path, my friends, I would say to you, you are probably involved in a path that is coming to you instead of you on a path that you're going out of. Do you understand the difference? Coming to you means you keep listening outside yourself. Well, what do you think? Well, what do you think? Well, what do they think? Well, what did my mother think? Well, what did my father think? Well, what did... And whatever, all this going on all the time. Those are paths from the outside. You've got to stop it. And how do you stop it? You know, you stop it. It isn't such a hard thing to do. You just begin to do all of the things we've been yelling at you nauseously. You're very tolerant. All these years, all this yelling, and here we are. Here we are, and the yelling, here we go again. How do you do it? You just do it by moment, you remember to remember that there is a magnificent, ever-present, abundant life force that is absolutely filled with your goodness, your depth of goodness in the deepest, most magnificent sense of the rightness, of the integrity, of the beauty, of the wholeness, of the creativity of your life and all of your lives and all of the past lives and the future lives and whatever those words mean to you, all in one magnificent explosion. And it's right here, right now. And when you start getting out of your mind and allowing yourself to what's so hard about that? Just be silent. No thought, no motion, silent, just for a moment. Can you hold it for a minute? I doubt it. Don't worry. Go on. There's another moment. There's always another moment. But as you know, if you say, I can't do this, I can't do it long enough, I have to extend it, so on, then you're just setting up another obstacle that says, I cannot meditate until I'm a perfect meditator. People come to me all the time and say, I'm not going to do this anymore. Why not? Because I'm no good at it. And I said, well, if you keep practicing, no. You see, the idea, you have to be a great meditator in order to learn to meditate. You know, if you stop to think about it, the words become very strange. And you begin to understand that all we're asking is that you devise ways in your own life, moment by moment, in whatever the job you are doing. I don't care what your job is. There are moments in every job, moment after moment, every hour, moment after moment after moment, when you can, if you really wanted to and just be with being. Just be with being. Nothing to do. Nothing to learn. Nothing to find. Just and when you begin to understand that that's really all that you have to do on your side, then you begin to, again, stop trying to find the perfect way, the good way, the magnificent road. This moment is the road. It's the only moment that you will ever have, is this moment. And the path that arises out of you, you can follow. A path that comes at you, the path may be coming at you, and lo and behold, you find you're on one side of the Grand Canyon and your road's on the other. And you're going to have to figure out, don't you all? It's over there, enlightenment, the perfect way, and you're over here. Isn't that the dilemma? How are you going to get from here to there? That is why you've postulated it all these years. When you stop the postulating and stop trying to build bridges across the Grand Canyon and realize that there's as much of the same thing on either side of this canyon, it's no different on the other side. When you finally understand that this moment is it, that you are the bridge and the silence of the is it, when you begin to know this in your being, then you begin to settle down onto whichever side of the canyon you are, because the joke is that you're on this side and there are all those people on the other side. And they think that your side has the answer, and you think that their side has the answer, and so everyone is trying to find ways to build themselves illusory bridges across non-existent canyons, because the necessity is to shut up and sit down in your life exactly as it is, exactly as it is, exactly as it is. This moment is exactly the PowerPoint. Exactly. Nothing better, nothing worse. This moment is it. This is it. When I say shut up and sit down in your life, I mean do it. There are endless moments of that available. If you postulate, you have to perfectly. Then we can have workshops to practice. Your being is constantly, powerfully present. And I've told you before, and I tell you again, this feeling, this awareness that you are seeking is so incredibly familiar and ever-present that you've overlooked it. I want to postulate for you, how many times a day do you walk around awe-inspired because you have a body? How many moments do you walk around, oh, I have this wonderful body, thank you, thank you, thank you, oh, I feel my body. You know, you walk around in your life, you are lucky. You feel your body at night when you go to bed and you say, oh, I feel my body here and this, or in other exalted moments. There are the moments when you feel your body's very nice, all right, all that's agreed. But my point here is, you don't ever walk around in awe and delight and gratitude over this body, and yet is ever present. In fact, most of the time, you don't even know you have it. You don't even know you have it until it starts giving you either pleasure or pain, and then you pay attention. Other than that, I think you tend to ignore it. And there is no mystery. But someone who says, well, Tom, you have a body. You wouldn't say, ah, my goodness, what a surprise. Well, it's the same thing as your awakened awareness. It is ever present. And if you'll just keep saying, I've got it, then there will come the moment of knowing I've always had it. You know, everyone who reaches enlightenment states categorically, every moment they say the same thing, everyone, it was there all the time. It was nothing new. Nothing was added, but just the blending in the instant, in the fullness of bringing the total moment and all of my different awarenesses into that one awareness, magnified its magnificence so much that I was then able to feel it in all the other parts of my awareness, all the other parts of my magnificence, all the other parts of my createdness. Understand? You begin where you are. And in those moments of building this, after moment, you begin to understand what we're saying. Now, I've had many wonderful questions, and I would like to deal with one because several of you asked the same question, and it has to do with death. It has to do with various people who have feelings deeply inside of themselves. When they begin to look at their fear level, as they did last month, they began to realize that one of the fears you have is of dying, not only of the act itself, but of the way it's going to happen and what your body is going to have to go through until that glorious moment comes. I don't think you're so much afraid of the last moment. I think it's all the moments up to the last moment, you know, of all the nightmares involved and how that could be, and so on and so on. Now, I salute all of you who have really allowed yourself to feel on the cellular level the degree of that fear, because it is the pulsating, overriding fear that humans have, because they look around and they learn one thing. All these bodies die. There isn't one that hasn't. And even the stories about the few whose bodies haven't died in the way that they thought, you don't relate, right? So comes the question. The question was put this way, various ways, but the main thing is here, is there a way to avoid death? The idea here is death a belief? And if you didn't believe in death, could you then escape death? I'd like to answer quickly. One of the absolute overriding and constant statements you make coming into a human body is you want to have a doorway out, and the doorway is death. Now, if you want to get a conclave of people together and decide that you want to go on in human bodies forever and ever, if you can get enough to play the game, and if you can get enough people to create a joint belief system strong enough, perhaps you could have it. But for this planet, at this time, I don't think you could get enough people willing to play that. Because there is a lot of excitement. For example, as good as Albuquerque is, you might want occasionally to go somewhere else. Just occasionally. And so knowing that you have other magnificent creative options, that you're not tied down to any one way of approaching reality, is very exciting. At the same time, I will state absolutely that you have already, as a planet, changed the longevity. You realize you're living longer and longer and longer, and now they are projecting 150 years. 150 years. How did that happen? It didn't have anything to do with anything other than a collective belief structure of enough people that said, well, let's extend this a little longer. Let's extend this a little longer. Let's play a few more games while we're here. Let's learn a little more. Let's expand our awareness. Let's do this, let's do that. And, it's getting longer and longer. So, yes, I can see a time when they will extend this life in much longer framework, if that's what you want. But what I want to talk about is the feeling of fear of death itself. Please hear this. I do not think that there is any way to truly, truly overcome that fear unless you begin to get in touch with that part of you that does not die. And the moment that you are, even for a moment, in touch of that part of you that you know will never die, that has the intrinsic you in it, not your life and not the things you've done and not the things that you haven't done and all that, but the intrinsic, magnificent fullness of life itself. Once you know that life does not die, that shape and form change and do this and do that, once you know this eternal part that never dies, then you relax. And then you can see it all as someone watching a play. You know those films are going to end soon enough. And you begin to see it in this way. You begin to relax into enjoying even the pain and the suffering, because you have touched upon the part that absolutely will never go into darkness. You touch it and you know it. And so death is just a tremendous help to you if you will face it. You see, the difficulty with the human is you've created death, and then you run around your life trying to ignore that you've created death. And you do many, many different things. You know, what do you do with people that are getting old and starting to die? You know, you don't put them in your living room. You hide them away. If you're lucky, you hide them in the back bedroom. Well, if you can't do that, there's always the rest home. There's always some other place. But they're never in the living room. Well, rarely. They're not in the front of your life. How do you respond when you go down the street and see someone who's very badly ill or deformed? What is your response? Do you look or do you look away? I'm not scolding. I'm just saying, let's be honest. I'm saying that you have created, especially in the Western world, a reality that says, let's not worry about the inevitability of death until we absolutely have to. And then by that time, you are probably so weak and worn out and tired that you don't care. You know, just whatever is fine. Just get it over with, you see? And so I'm asking for a creative alignment, especially for the very young, to realize that the delight is knowing. When you begin to face the fear of death, you begin to really deepen your own life. It isn't that you become morbid. What you become is enlightened. Instead of becoming morbid, you begin to face these feelings that are constantly rising and falling in you, that have as part of their patterning a wonder about that event. Now, I would also like to say that in the years to come, I think you're going to begin to have a different, you're going to bring back an old story about death, which is to begin looking at it as mysterious and wondrous and in some way totally empowering. Instead of looking at it in the old days, they knew that death was so empowering that much of their ritual from the youngest on, they had all these stages. And what is the main technique in a real ritual? Not a pretend one. There has to be a death. You cannot have a ritual that has a rebirth unless there's a death. And so when you live consciously, you begin to realize that your life is one continuous ritual of leaving one belief, life form, way of being behind. It dies and something new is created. And when you begin to participate in this, with it, watching your own stages as you go through it, then the last stage isn't going to be a big surprise. But what is the big? What are your transitions? What are your transition times? Well, you quit your job when you're 65. That's it. Isn't that the only one you really have here? And then you die. You retire and then you die, and that's it. Well, between the time of your birth and your death, there are endless, magnificent deaths and rebirths. And when you start embracing and looking for the death and the rebirth, then when that so-called big one comes along, it isn't going to be like that. Because you will have understood and been delighted at the letting go in the death and the re-excitement about the new, so that you have this continuation of expansion. And what's next? What's next? That's the question. That's the question that excites. What's next? You see, the whole point of ritual is you finish one and something new is born. But if you're still trying to hang on to something that you haven't allowed to die, then difficulty. And if I might say, one of the greatest difficulties has to do with aging and the tendency to try to hold on to old forms of beauty and life and so forth, which should long ago have dropped away so that amazing new ones could take place, so that the next question when you're 90 is, what's next? What's next? And to mean it, because you have watched your life, because you have participated in the death and the birth of endless yous. You are not only one. You are endless faces of consciousness, now this, now that, now changing, now moving, now saying that's enough of that, let's try something new. I understand. And the excitement of all that is what this whole thing is all about. And it begins with you paying attention. It begins with you, that when life presents you with a death of whatever it is, of an idea, of a belief, of a relationship, of I don't care what it is, you know all of it. Or if it's just that you wake up one morning and you say, well, that's enough of that. That's a death. And instead of saying, oh,
that's terrible. Where did it go? The next thing is, what's next? And the excitement of the what next is what I ask you to bring to the moment of your death. Because it's that very excitement that says, what's next? Because all the other ones you've seen have let go and be reborn with a new sense. It isn't that you lost anything. You still carry the magnificence of whatever seemingly died. So it's a wonderful continuation. It's a road that comes out of you. And that road is still in you. And so you can walk in the next step with assurance. Why? Because it's your road. Nobody else has to stick it in front of your nose. You create it out of you, out of your being, out of your attention. And you do it by staying in the moment and paying attention. One of the main things I want you to remember, please, about all this is there is this magnificent intuitive power inside of you that 99 out of 100 times in every moment is screaming at you to pay attention to it so it can be a part of the road that you move along. That intuitive nature, which is your natural state, because another aspect of your goodness, which in the months to come we'll talk about other aspects, but goodness is one aspect. Another aspect of the natural state is intuition. It isn't some kind of a little intuition that says, maybe I shouldn't do this. That isn't my point. It is a bold, and because every time we talk about intuition, you know, we get into this little business of right and wrong, and is it a little trickle, or is it a vast river, and where do I find it, and what does it feel like, and all of this. Intuition is a constant, magnificent thundering in the silence that will always, if you begin to simply fall into it, it will begin to fill you with a knowing. We've talked about this in years past. Let's bring it up again. I've asked you to really consider living every moment of your life before you make a decision about anything, whether it's to buy, you know, cabbage or lettuce for dinner. It doesn't matter. But if you can use every moment of every choice that you are making to go to the intuition first, then you will find that when it comes to the big ones, whether to work in New York City or in Albuquerque, when it comes to the big decisions, your intuition and you will be so completely blended that it will not be such a difficult thing. Because you have used it 100,000 times to decide what kind of fruit you should buy, what road you should take. Do you understand what I'm saying? You develop this skill moment by moment by moment. But you see, what you do, my friends, is you wait until, you know, you're strapped to the table. The doctor's saying, well, are you going to live or die? And you're going, I don't know. Well, do you want to do this or do you want? I don't know. Well, why not? Because you've waited. You see? Until the last moment. You can begin now, and I mean this moment, as you get up and leave this seat. You will know intuitively who to go and embrace. You will know intuitively what to do. You will begin to get in touch with this life force. You know, you're very funny because you all believe on one level of this incredible, all-knowing, all-powerful, omniscient, omnipresent power, and you continually forget to ask it anything. But if we are going to begin to define what the power of awareness is, you know one of the components is going to be smarter than you are. Because if it isn't, I don't think you're going to want it. It's going to intrinsically have more awareness of the next moment, of the next year, of the next life. It's going to be bigger. It's going to have a vast, isn't it? Is it going to be smaller? It's going to be endlessly vaster, and you know it. And so you know intellectually, or perhaps just prayerfully, that this other awareness is there, but you forget to ask. And so you wait until the last moment, until you're so frightened and so confused that there isn't a prayer of really knowing it. And then, poor God, now I'm just in jest here, poor God has to go through such techniques as to smack you over the head and give you a big dream. You know, say, all right, are you ready here? And then it comes in a dream. Oh, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to do this. Well, endlessly, you don't have to wait for the big dream. Endlessly, this intuition is screaming, and you have to practice. You don't know what to do with your life? You have to start asking about the vegetables. I'm absolutely literal. You have to begin where you are. You have to begin with the small things. And as you begin to realize there is an incredible power that is moving every moment, Every moment, when you begin to feel it and know it, then you begin to trust it. And then, when the big events come, it's no different than any other. In fact, you don't sense it as anything other than just the next decision. So, please know what you know and use what you know. By that I mean, please know that you know that there is a presence. All the descriptions of this power of consciousness, of God, of awareness say the same thing. It guides you. It leads you. It embraces you. It nourishes you. It absolutely loves you. It has all of the knowing deeply within it. And so know what you know and then use it. In the most small, insignificant things, go inside and just be aware. What's next? What's next? What's next? In the very young, I don't mean in age, I mean in evolutionary expansion, they don't want to use this power because they are building the isolated ego that says, I want to do it myself. So if there's still a voice inside of you that says, I want to do it myself, then this is going to be silly for you. But I don't think anyone would bother to come here to this windbag unless that had been taken care of a long time ago. So, what you're asking is to become aware that that small voice, you see, it's not that God's voice is small, it's the other way around. The ego's voice is small, but it's very close, and it's very loud. The voice of God is very vast, it's very deep, and it's very silent. But it's all powerful. And as you begin to drift moment by moment into that other, and you devise your own asking, for some it will be, what's next? For others it will be, who am I? For others it will be, show me. For others it will be, love me. Whatever it is. When you begin to live with that ritual going on endlessly within you, then you begin to blend so that there is no separation of the knowing and the known. So the knower, the knowing, and the known are all one. So there's but one magnificence moving through every moment with incredible grace, perfect beauty, and total love. It's worth it, my friends. It's worth it. So, my deep thanks to all of you for yet again sitting through this. Those of you that would wish to join us, we'll take 10 minutes of meditation.
Good morning. Before we end today, I would like to add two more pieces of information. The first of being information about the January workshop. While getting together the information sheet for this year, I accessed last year's information and found out that the cost of the workshop last year was $150. In talking to Mary Margaret, we agreed that even though it was late, we would offer that, change the price from $175 to $150. So, for those people that have sent in the full amount, you will be refunded the extra $25. For those who wish to attend the January workshop, the deposit is $50. The full cost is $150. Please try and get your deposits in before Christmas, and I will get back to you right after the holidays. The other information has to do with the tour to Australia. We wanted you all to know that enough deposits were collected to make this tour a go. So we feel that you have received all of the Australia-Fiji information. And if you are interested in that tour, simply send Justin Moore a check for $300. That is a non-refundable deposit. Those checks should be made out to Friends of Vista Grande, and his address is P.O. Box 1656, Taos, New Mexico 87571. And I think that's it for now, so thank you.